Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Well, it's a new year. That means it's time for a reset. And I was inspired by my guest to reset myself a little bit as well. So I resolved this year to find greater intimacy with God, to hear His voice over the voice of others. And, you know, sometimes that's kind of challenging in this world where there's great pressure to be noticed by how many likes or retweets we get on a post or the amount of applause we receive after doing something really grand. Perhaps being noticed means getting a promotion or a trophy or just affirmation from an unlikely source, and sometimes we strive for that, don't we? Well, how do we find our identity in God in the quiet, hidden places of life to move from needing to do great things to finding greater intimacy with our Creator? Well, that's my subject for our show today. Today, my guest, Sarah Haggerty, is the author of a new book called Unseen, The Gift of Being Hidden in a World That Loves to Be Noticed. Let me tell you a little bit about her, and we'll get her on the show. Sarah Haggerty is the author of Unseen and Every Bitter Thing That Is Sweet. She's wife to Nate. She's mother of six, including four children who are adopted from Ethiopia and Uganda. She has a brand new baby and also a toddler who's found his voice amid them all. Sarah writes regularly about life delays, finding God in the unlikely, motherhood, marriage, and adoption. You can find her at sarahhaggerty.net. Sarah, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thank you so much, Joe. I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, I just loved your book because it talked about those hidden places and, you know, those that can kind of have a double meaning of being hidden voluntarily or being hidden not voluntarily. How did you come to title your book Unseen, and where did you find yourself being hidden?
You know, the title came much after the book was written, which is sort of a little behind the scenes. It wouldn't it be great if it just fell from the sky and we knew that that was the title and then I wrote the book. But I the manuscript was written in full before we landed on Unseen. But I will say I lived in a place of hiddenness for a long time before I wrote the book. And I didn't have a term for it, and it felt uncomfortable. And I many times wanted to climb out of it. And that was part of what caused me to write the book, maybe even a decade later, is because I thought so many of us are experiencing this. This reality is even embedded in Scripture, and yet we don't have a name for it necessarily, and we're not familiar with it as a part of our walk in God. And so I don't think I'm alone here. For me, it started, hiddenness started for me when I was in my 20s, and or at least I started to realize it when I was in my 20s and walking through infertility and watching my friends go through different seasons and stages of life where I felt stuck. And so I would go to baby showers and watch my friends get celebrated and yet feel somehow like this waiting room that I was in wasn't one that they could identify with, and was one that in not being something that somebody else could easily identify with, it made me feel a little bit in the background, in the shadows. And how do I find God when I'm in the shadows? So that was one of the first times I really went, I'm not seen here. I'm not known. No one can understand this part of my story. And so what do I do with God in this place?
Well, and isn't it true that when you're in that place of feeling like you're unseen, you really feel isolated and alone? It's not somewhere that someone is with you.
Yes. Yeah. And I think in some ways, I think we are so community oriented that, and we see the beauty around friendships and being in relationship and church community, that we often can miss that there's also an invitation in being alone. And that oftentimes, even in Scripture, we see where God sent people or allowed people to go into the wilderness so that they would be formed there. Jesus even spent time in the wilderness to get formed, even though he was fully God. You know, we look at John the Baptist or even David. We see Joseph in seasons where they were quite literally hidden from others' eyes. And it was there that God really made them into who that, I mean, Jesus may be independent of those other examples I used, but it was there that God really made them who they were.
You know, I remember telling a friend of mine that I felt like I was in this wilderness place where I was waiting, and I wasn't even sure what I was waiting for me. And she said something so surprising. She said, you know, I feel for you, but I'm almost giddy for you because I know that something great is going to occur because of this time you're spending in the wilderness. And I wasn't sure how to react to her.
Yeah. I mean, I think our culture is so oriented around impact, and I think we were made for impact. God did make us to do great things on the earth. But I think without a grid for how the wilderness and the hidden seasons of life where we're not seen, where we're not celebrated, where we're not acknowledged, where we're in the back cubicle and not getting the promotion can actually be the place where God forms us. Without that grid, it can feel a little bewildering to think, wait a second, there can be something good that could come from this.
Well, and as I read about your story, you know, you went about your life like most of us did, from being a teenager to going into college to wanting to be ambitious and do great things for God. And you had that. You were working with teenagers in ministry. And then you came to this place where you felt like maybe you weren't as excited about that, or you weren't getting that same rush of excitement with doing great things for God. Tell me a little bit about that time, that first experience of feeling like you were being unseen.
You know, my husband and I worked for a beautiful ministry sharing the gospel with teenagers. And I would find myself, after many years of working for this ministry and volunteering for this ministry, sitting over coffee or dinner with someone sharing the gospel and saying things I had always said, and yet in the back of my mind going, do I really believe this about God? You know, talking about the love of God, and yet behind closed doors feeling like, I don't know that I really feel that love. I don't know that I really am living as if I believe it. I know how to say it. I know how to talk about it. I get pretty zealous about sharing the gospel. But what about in the times when I'm not sharing the gospel? What about in the times, you know, 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon when I'm cleaning the grout in my bathroom, or taking a nap, or sitting at the DMV, you know, the very mundane parts of life? Who is God there? And do I really believe this God that I'm talking about? And so it was after a stint of full-time ministry that I started to realize I don't really know him apart from my impact. I feel great about my relationship with God when I'm making impact and when I'm telling others about him. But in the other 80% of my day, I don't really know how I feel about him or what I think he thinks about me. And so it was after that time that my husband and I just said, it's time to take a break from full-time ministry and find out what he thinks of us, particularly me, because I was the one wrestling the most. What he thinks of me when I'm not producing, when I'm not succeeding, when I'm not making an impact.
I highlighted a section in your book where you said, I knew Jesus as the one who walked on water and calmed the storm and healed a leper. I could describe that God in my sleep. But who was God to me during those ordinary days, the days when I didn't need him to calm a storm or walk across the water or help me plan a Bible study? Who was he when I had nothing at all to give him? I feel like a lot of us have this performance-based idea of success and getting his approval, and we do apply that to God, even though we shouldn't, should we?
No, and I think we don't necessarily know that we are oriented that way until we either choose to stop producing or we're in a stretch of time where we just can't. And that, you know, that goes back to your earlier question. I think sometimes I'll just speak for myself, I resent when I cannot produce. And I feel like I need to get back to a place where I can produce. But really what's underneath that is I don't know his kind eyes towards me when I'm not producing.
So when you went into that season, that first season of feeling like you were unseen, and it sounds like your husband was actually a little bit with you during that season, how did you begin to see his eyes looking at you?
Well, I remember I started working in a boutique. It was a boutique that sold French and Italian pottery, and it was so unique that, you know, maybe in one given day we'd have 5 customers. So it was just me working in there. They told me not to dust because apparently people like to shop in cottage dust. And so I literally was in the store with nothing to do. And it was then that I took my Bible and I started reading just during, in the middle of the day. I'm not even talking a quiet time, but sort of unconventionally, and going, what does God think of me when I'm in here? And I started to find places in his word where it talks about his delight. He delivered me because he delighted in me. Our God rejoices over us with singing. And I started to go, does that happen when I'm not making an impact? Well, here I am in the store, not even sharing the gospel with anyone, barely making a sale. And it was one of the first times that I felt his delight. And I started to think, from looking at his word, he enjoys me because he made me. He likes me in the store. And if I can find his delight on me here, this kind of changes my paradigm.
You know, you call that point in your book an unproductive life. And I love the story of how you said a woman came in who you knew from your community, and you felt like you were caught being unproductive, and you were a little bit embarrassed at first, but that thought left your mind as quickly as it had entered. Talk more about that and how that was a sign of growth.
Yeah, well, it was one of my husband's old college friends' wives, and she and her husband were, you know, living the life that I thought I had wanted. And so I do remember feeling like an immediate sense of sort of shame. Oh, no, she's working. She knows I'm working in this boutique. Like, I'm not doing anything to advance the kingdom of God. I'm making minimum wage. And but then shortly after that, where I would have maybe stayed in that place for a much longer time because I was so wrapped up in what I could produce, because of the time I had spent before then in that store really seeing God likes me here, and I think he's actually reorienting my mind around what it means to be his daughter, I started to see, hey, she caught me being insignificant, but this is actually highly significant to God. This is his invitation for me to see his eyes on me is the same when I'm sharing the gospel with a room full of people as when I'm picking up the bills from my mailbox, as when I'm doing the dishes. I can engage with God when I'm taking the laundry up to my, I mean now, when I'm taking the laundry up to my children's rooms, when I'm changing a baby's diaper, when I'm not doing anything that anyone would notice or would make even a ripple in terms of impact. I can engage with him there, and he actually likes me there. And so thinking of that in that store, I started to feel like it doesn't matter if I'm caught being unproductive. Maybe my orientation towards productivity is really my own sense of wanting to make something of my life rather than seeing how God sees my life.
Well, isn't that interesting? Because when I think about the women who I know who seem to just almost reek of peacefulness, where they don't seem to be motivated by the being seen and being noticed, but are just full of God's grace and peace. And I've always wondered, where does that come from? And it comes from a lot of hard work of being in that hidden place, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think when I look at women, you know, I just turned 40, so I'm kind of looking ahead, women in their 50s and 60s, and kind of scanning the landscape going, okay, who's living a life that I want to, I want my, who has a life that I want my life to look like, not necessarily in form, but in heart, 10, 20 years from now. And it is oftentimes the common thread among those women is that they've been weathered by life and they've been hidden. And they embrace the hiddenness instead of resenting it, whether it's they were at home with a lot of kids for a long stretch of time and doing things that nobody celebrated, or they were taking care of a sick parent and instead of resenting it, embraced what God had for them in that season, or loving a husband quietly who wasn't yet a believer or who wasn't loving them well, and they found God in that place. I look at women in their 50s and 60s who have done that, and many of them have such a zeal for God that doesn't get shaken whether or not they've got a crowd applauding them.
I'm talking to author Sarah Haggerty today about her book, Unseen, The Gift of Being Hidden in a World That Loves to Be Noticed. We'll talk more with Sarah when we come back on Connecting Faith. If you're listening today and you'd love to get a copy of her book, well, she and her publisher have graciously provided a few copies. You can go to our website at myfaithradio.com and click on Connecting Faith, submit your name and contact information that way, and we'll put you on a list into a drawing at the end of today's show. We'll be right back now on Connecting Faith. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm Joe Bender and talking to author Sarah Haggerty today about her book, Unseen. Sarah, you talked about a time when you were, of course, in a place where you felt unseen. And now I know you have 6 kids. There must be different parts of your day even where you feel like you're a little bit unseen. How do you connect with God during those times to continue to feel his presence and feel his eyes upon you?
You know, one of the key things for me connecting with God now is giving myself permission to come to him as I am. I think for many years I felt like, oh, I just got to get to a place where I feel good about my prayers before God, or I feel better about myself, or more confident to communicate to Him from a place of faith. But nowadays I feel like a lot of my prayers are shorter. They're more, help me, Jesus. I need you right now. And more raw. And I think some of, for me in this recent stage of life, some of the connectedness and the intimacy has come from me being willing to go to God messy and expect that He would move my heart from the place of my own mess.
You know, some may feel, or maybe they have friends whose words might cause them to feel banished or punished somehow, that being in hiding is a purpose that God has made for you as a punishment. But you say that actually being hidden is more of an invitation. It's an invitation to know Him more. But we really need to orient our minds to believe that, don't we?
Yeah, I think in our, you know, there's so many opportunities to make an impact on the earth right now. And there are so many chances for us to see the other people around us making an impact. You know, while I am sweeping the floor and doing the dishes and getting ready to, you know, pick up a kid, I can look online and see my friend who started a foundation, another one who's digging wells in Africa, another who is, you know, we can list these things. Or even my neighbor whose kids won the spelling bee. You know, I can see so much impact. And so I think in some ways we've been influenced by what we see. It attaches to what's inside of us, which is this desire to be great. And we can easily forget that the greats in Scripture, many of them, the common thread of what they had was a life of a long stretch of time of hiddenness. 13 years for Paul, I think it was. You know, there are times and seasons where God forms us, but I don't know that it's something that we naturally embrace. I think sometimes, I mean, I suppose if anybody's like me, we go kicking and screaming.
I'd be with you. I'd be kicking maybe a little bit harder and pulling, trying to pull back like a tug of war. But it does seem that we don't get a choice, do we? Sometimes we just get put in that place where we have to either commune with Him, have conversations with Him, or we're going to remain there, aren't we?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I call it an invitation, but I think God's at times a kindly, firm Father. And so He foists us into circumstances that we cannot get out of. Mm. I'm in one of those right now. I'm walking through a long stretch of a waiting period for something that I've been asking the Lord for in prayer. And nearly every day I wake up and go, can this just be over? I just want this to be over. And yet, if I can stay in the place of discomfort just a little bit longer, I feel like God whispers, I have something for you here in the waiting room. This isn't just a whitewashed room with a metal chair. This is actually a place where you can encounter me. If you'll just stay a little bit longer, I have something for you here.
Mm. Well, and I don't know about you, but I've definitely found times when I just got myself out of there a little too prematurely, or maybe without doing all the work that was necessary to gain all of that wonderful wonder, I guess I would say, of what God had had for me. And that can be dangerous.
Yeah, I think I know that my fleshly, my natural inclination is to want to claw my way out of what feels uncomfortable. And hiddenness feels uncomfortable. I mean, I think we just need to admit it. It doesn't feel natural to have even your closest friends not know a pain that you're walking through because it's so unique to you. It doesn't feel natural to watch other people around you get celebrated or promoted and you feel overlooked. And so I think our natural inclination is, let me get myself out of this place so I feel better. For God's sake, you know, like, let me get to a place where I can feel like people are noticing me. And yet I think when we do that, God puts us right back. There's just so much to be had in hiddenness. It's rich, but we're kind of like foolish little puppies. You know, we got to keep getting put right back in the fence.
Till we're ready to get out. You know, you write about the story of Mary and this concept of being wasteful, because sometimes, especially if we are people who are strivers by nature, we feel like that time that we're spending on ourselves and our relationship with God is wasteful. We're not producing anything. And you just mentioned how Mary was also considered to be maybe wasteful of this expensive perfume that she lavished on Jesus' feet. Can you unpack that concept of just wastefulness a little bit?
Yeah, I love this story because I feel like, I learn through stories. So I'm looking at this, and here's this woman who's basically spent her whole livelihood. She's the one who anointed Jesus with this flask of oil. And the disciples and others who are in the room are going, she could have fed the poor with this. And I think, oh my goodness, how often do I think that? Like, I got time, I got to go serve. I have time, I need to give. I have time, it should be someone else's. And yet in that instance, she did this kind of wild act of love that was really even culturally outside the norm. And Jesus silenced the discussion about what she should have done with that money. And he said, what she did will be told throughout the whole earth when the gospel is shared. And so he, in that story, tells us there is value to wasting on me. Mm-hmm. And it's a concept it's taken me, I feel like, years, I still have many years ahead of me of unpacking that there are times where Jesus says, just come sit at my feet and let the serving rest. Just come sit at my feet and say no to the opportunity to go give to something else. And I think, even as I'm saying that, we go, no, that can't be right. But what about, I think of Psalm 27, one thing I have asked of the Lord, this will I seek, that I may dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life and gaze upon his beauty. And the psalmist, who I think was David, wasn't saying in eternity. He's saying, let's start now. It matters to just sit at the feet of Jesus and look at him.
Mm-hmm. Well, you write about how Saturdays have become a time where you say that life happens. And I have a feeling that you've kind of taken that concept and built it into your life as a family. Talk about Saturdays, if you will.
Yeah, so we do a Sabbath on Saturday, and it's not maybe not a traditional Sabbath in the sense that, I still am going to do dishes, and I sometimes change the laundry. It's not like there's absolutely no work in our home, but we basically have carved out a 24-hour period where we don't do outside commitments, or rarely, and we just let life rest while our bodies rest. So we read books, and we hike in the woods, and we stay in our pajamas a little bit longer, and we spend a little bit more time in the Word. And one of the things that I've found is that, at least initially, and I still feel this, on and off, is that about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I start to feel really uncomfortable on Saturdays, because it's like, man, I have been barreling. Life has been barreling up until Saturday. And I have the same conversation, I guess now that I say it, nearly every Saturday with the Lord, where I go, man, I really have been trying to produce for you, and I really feel better when I produce. And so this discomfort I feel is really me feeling uncomfortable with being unproductive. And then I just have to say, God, tell me who you think I am. Mm-hmm. Tell me what you think of me when I'm not producing. There's something about a Sabbath that I think not only enables our souls to rest, but kind of forces us to go, what does God really think of us when we're not producing?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd love to hear more about your journey of having kids, of collecting this beautiful family that you now have, and how you fit in being hidden to that. We'll be right back with Sarah Hegarty. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for joining us today, and Happy New Year. Well, today I'm just blessed to be able to speak to Sarah Hegarty. She's written a great new book called Unseen, The Gift of Being Hidden in a World That Loves to Be Noticed. Sarah, you have 6 kids now, and that process was not easy to come by. Can you talk a little bit about how you came to have all of these kids in your life and what you learned about yourself and your husband as well, what you both learned about each other and God through the process of both adoption and this new little baby that has graced your life?
Yes. Well, I often say to my husband, I'm the type of person who's wired to have 2 kids 4 years apart. And we had 6 kids in 7 years. So I suppose that's maybe to the listener who has a lot of kids and they maybe didn't plan to have that many. we walked through 8 years of infertility. And out of that time, we knew early on that we wanted to adopt. We just thought that we would adopt after we had biological children. But we, after we walked through such a length of time of infertility, we really felt like God was leading us to adopt. So we adopted our first two from Ethiopia, and then a year later started the process to adopt two more from Uganda. And then it was 13 years. We've been married 13 years. 12 years after I found out I was pregnant with my first biological child. Mm. And since then, we had another surprise pregnancy. I'm 40 and I just had a baby. So it seems like the Lord gave us a long stretch of time where it was just the two of us. And now here we are with six kids, both of us kind of going, man, this isn't what we planned. But there's a great undoing that can happen when your plans get overturned and the Lord says, nope, this is what I have for you.
You write that your four children who are adopted went through some process that you called shedding their orphan skin, shedding their old selves to become who they truly are. Tell me more about this process and how that impacted you and your family.
Well, it's ever ongoing, interestingly enough. One of the things that, you know, I friends who ask about adoption, I think sometimes it can seem so different and so other. But one of the things that we've found in kind of bringing these children into our fold is that their heart issues actually aren't all that different than ours. And I think that's maybe been one of the more surprising things, but also been really revelatory about the human heart, is that they are learning to find a safety in being loved. They're learning to shed shame and to walk into God's arms from their pain, from their history. And my husband and I grew up in intact families with parents who loved us. And yet there are times, you know, I think of one of my children was going through an issue several years ago. And my husband looked at me in the eye and he said, I think you walked through the same thing when you were 23 and we were newly married. Mm. Like, you're not all that different than she is. And so their shedding of orphan skin, I think in some ways has mirrored our own shedding of orphan skin.
Well, and it seems that book after book, speaker after speaker, conference after conference, I seem to hear this theme that women especially are just having such a difficult time seeing our identity in Christ as being first and foremost, that we're letting our expectations of ourselves or others' expectations of us, our job, our career, our marriage, our parents, our family, our friends, define who we are before we're willing to look at who God says we are. And it seems like such a backwards way to do it, and yet it's so real and so rampant.
It is. I think finding our identity in God is not something that comes naturally. And I mean, to go back to hiddenness, I think in some ways, as women, we are thwarted from our dreams at times because the Lord wants us so desperately to know how he feels about us. And if we walk out that dream, we might, even though it's 10 degrees off center, we might just have our eyes fixed on what, on the dream or what we could have accomplished in it, or even the glory of that rather than just him. I think there is such a crisis in the body of Christ of knowing what it feels like to be intimately loved by God when we are doing nothing for him. And so I think he oftentimes will put a hurdle in our way or put us in a place where we're not getting what we deeply desire because he wants us to hear what we need most, which is his voice.
Mm. One of the ways that you write that you came closer to kind of understanding him and how much he loved you was just learning what it meant to be vulnerable and how important that is to deepening your relationship with God. Is vulnerable not a place that you would typically like to be?
Not in my 20s. I think I'm learning now what a great place it is with Jesus on the other end of it. I think there's a lot of conversation these days about vulnerability, but I feel like vulnerability with Jesus as an end, meaning the goal is to be most vulnerable before him. I feel like, I'm relearning kind of how to do life from a place of vulnerability before God, being bare before him. In my 20s, I couldn't sit alone with God for more than 15 minutes without feeling like I wanted to crawl out of my skin. I think a lot of people can maybe identify with keeping your watch on when you sit in your time with God, feeling more like it's a box to check and something to get done and say that you've done or feel better about doing than it is a conversation that feels safe. And so for me, vulnerability, you know, it is, hey, I've just had a day where I yelled at my kids. And deep down inside, I feel terrible about it, but I'm kind of continuing on through my day. I yelled at them. I'm kind of going on. I'm knowing that I didn't handle that well, but I still have stuff to do. So I'm just getting more stuff done, you know, and then instead of just continuing to push through life, pausing and going, okay, Lord, what was it that led me to yell at them? A, B, I repent and I just come clean before you. And now will you just tell me how you see me? I feel like that vulnerability makes me want to keep talking to God rather than put my watch on and end that time so quick.
Well, and you paint such a beautiful picture when you tell the story of one of your children always saying up, up, or uppies is what my kids used to say. And they would get to the point where they have had enough. No matter where we were, we could have been having a blast at the park or maybe shopping at the grocery store, but just wanting to be up. And they'd kind of grab the back of your shoulder with their little chubby hand, and they just wanted to be held, to travel along on your hip to wherever we were going. And if we could just start to get that picture with crawling into God's lap, then maybe we'd start to understand that it's okay to have had enough.
Yeah, I was actually traveling, wasn't at home, when I was in a hotel room and just processing some of the differences between my children who had been adopted and then my two biological, at that time it was just one biological son. And immediately I remembered, like, oh my goodness, all I hear all day long from my son, my biological son, is up, please. Mm-hmm. I mean, literally those were the only two words I heard him saying. And I thought, oh, that's the difference, because my big kids, you know, they came to me out of a place of having forsaken vulnerability, because, you know, what they had walked through led to feeling shame. And so when you feel shame, you just don't want to open up. You don't want to show people the weaker parts of you. But for someone who grows up in the understanding that they are loved, it's all you want to do is be vulnerable, because it's safe. Vulnerability leads to an embrace. It leads to mommy's nuzzling her nose against your cheek saying, I got you, baby. Mm-hmm. It leads to daddy just coming home from work and scooping you up in his arms. But my big kids who had been adopted, it was not natural for them to say, I need you. In fact, quite the opposite. When they started to feel needy is when they distanced themselves. And I think I look at the picture of them and I go, I think I'm more like them. When I start to feel needy, I want to run from God naturally, because I feel uncomfortable with being weak. But if I can start to see what he looks at when he sees me when I'm weak, if I can start to believe that he draws near to the brokenhearted and doesn't shun us because we don't have it together, I want to go to him more. I want to say, up, please.
Mm-hmm. Whenever I'm having a difficult day, I might shoot a text to one of my friends and I'll just say, I want to run. I need to get out of here. And she'll send me the same text every single time. And it's a picture and it says, run to God. And it's just, I know I'm going to get it from her, but I need that. I need to get it back, because I feel like what you just said, so related. I'm guessing it will relate to a lot of other people who are listening as well. I want to get out, and instead of running toward God, which would really be the safer place to be.
You know, one of our children, shortly after we adopted them, we were at the beach and we were all swimming in the ocean. And I was counting heads. This was the first time I had to count heads, because we had four. And I noticed that one was missing, which is just a panic moment for a mom when you're in the ocean. And I scan the beach and I see one of my children running in the opposite direction from me. So I start calling her name and I start running after her, and she's moving faster away from me and she's kind of clutching her neck. Finally, I catch up to her and I say, what's happened? And it's clear she doesn't have the language for it, because she's new to the country, but she had been stung by a jellyfish.
Oh.
And she's clinging to her neck. And what, you know, such panic to be in the ocean and then all of a sudden feel this terrible ache and not know what it's from. But the strangest thing was that she ran away from me. And I'm thinking, like, what kid runs away from their parent when they're hurt? Mm-hmm. You know, literally, I'm calling your name and she ran away. And in that moment, I felt like God said, that's you.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a picture to me of how my go-to tendency when I get hurt, or when I'm in a place I don't want to be, or when I'm stuck in a circumstance, is to run, like to figure out a solution out, to work my way out of this, darn it, because it stinks so bad, to figure out, you know, my solution instead of running to him and going, help.
My mom calls it stubborn self-sufficiency. She said, I'm infected with it, and maybe most of us are.
I think so. I think the self-sufficiency really only grows when we don't, you know, I see it as like one day at a time. If I could have one encounter with God today where I really allow myself to feel how kind he is when I'm weak, then tomorrow I might be more inclined to go back there again, to go back into his arms again.
Well, you're right that that was really a process, or continues to be a process for you, to learn to train your eyes to be in wonder of what God thinks about you. Can you give some tips on how someone could begin to train their eyes to see how God sees us?
I think in general, our souls only grow when we slow down. I think there's such an inertia to our lives that most of us could really benefit from the advice, slow down. And I'm saying that to myself as well. I think there are pieces of God deposited all around us that we can often miss because we're so busy producing for him. So I would say practically, you know, I've done different things in different stretches of life. For one stretch, I blocked off parts of my calendar like a couple times a week for what I called a wonder hour. And kids would be napping. I'd put a key on the door, an antique key on the door to kind of indicate to them, don't interrupt me for this hour. And I'd read poetry or read the word or read some kind of book that's inspiring me towards following God. Or I'd take a walk in the woods, which sometimes meant quite literally like walking through a kitchen that was a train wreck and ignoring it to get outside and say, okay, everything in me wants to task right now, but I think my soul's going to grow. My heart will grow towards you, God, if I press pause and I say, who are you right now, God? I want to see you in a new way. I want to see things I can't see when I'm tasking. So that's one practical way that I've found him is even when I did my wonder hours regularly, it would be during them. I would intentionally choose the most productive time of my day to do a wonder hour and to say, I'm choosing right now to look at God and to see what happens in my inner man on my insides when I do that instead of tasking.
Oh, I love that. Such great advice. And maybe you're going through a season like that and listening and thinking, how is it that I can have that ability to see how God sees me? That's just a great way to get quiet before him during a time when you would otherwise be productive. Well, I'm talking to Sarah Haggerty today in her book, Unseen, The Gift of Being Hidden in a World That Loves to Be Noticed. We'll be right back with Sarah in just a minute. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. Thanks for joining us today. Well, I'm just so blessed to be having Sarah Haggerty on the air today with me talking about her book, Unseen, The Gift of Being Hidden in a World That Loves to Be Noticed. Sarah, are you better able to maybe see people for who they are as you've come to understand more who God sees you as?
Oh, I love that question. Yeah, it's been one of the best byproducts of all of this. This has been a decade, but I feel like I have found myself to have a lot more grace for people in hard times or in different stretches of their life where, I might think they're acting this way. There's something behind this. There's something behind how they're acting this way. I don't need them to just clean up their act. I might just let them work it out on the inside. There's a story behind this. Or to even just acknowledge, the person who sits alone at church or the person who's at the grocery store doing their job faithfully every day and seeing the beauty behind that, I feel like I see people more. I feel like my eyes have been opened more to see a story rather than just a person who's performing something.
Well, and you're so great about sharing those stories so that when we read your words, we feel like we're part of that story or our stories are worth telling as well. And that seems like such a gift just to know that we are not alone. We might be alone in our little hiddenness, but we're not alone in being hidden.
Yeah, and that's been one of the sweet byproducts of this book. There's an online community that's sort of formed around the book, and the efforts aren't now to go be seen, but to encourage one another to find him in being unseen. And that's been super cool for me to see that there is, I mean, so many have resonated with finding God in the unseen. And I think so many have already been living it long before I wrote a book. I mean, and this topic is ancient. I think I just, you know, I'm tapping into a very old stream. But I feel like as I've talked about it more and as more people have read the book, I'm seeing that there's something beautiful about friends encouraging one another to stay hidden if they're meant to be hidden, or to find him in the hidden places and not just go accomplish the next big thing. If God has them in a waiting room, cheering one another on in each other's waiting rooms.
Well, and what great wealth of experience we have in those who we are surrounded by. I love if I will just pray for some help and God will send someone into my life to be able to share something with me. It's interesting, though, when I'm going through something difficult, if I'm in a season of darkness, I still tend to strive. Like I can't get past it. I want to, learn the most that I can during that season of darkness. And my foster sister just sat me down just a few days ago and said, you know, sometimes you're in a season and you don't really know why. You don't need to learn something. You don't need to know what it is that you're learning.
But sometimes
you're just going to have to be okay with the fact that God may be using you to help someone else. And maybe you're going through this to help someone else and you don't even know how, or you don't know why or when, but you need to be okay with that unknownness.
Oh, that is wonderful advice. Yeah, that's something I've been thinking about lately too, just the mystery of God. And if I can stop squirming so much under the mystery of God, he might be actually depositing something into me. If I can trust out of mystery, I mean, I feel like I am more inclined to trust when I have a handle on what I think is going on. And yet I feel like maturity in God, the more he is maturing me, the more there is mystery in my life. And the more he's saying, okay, you could trust me when you knew a little bit, but what if you know nothing but me? Can you trust?
That's for sure the most difficult point, because I want to know that my pain and suffering was worth it. But I think that's just having him say, I'm just not going to tell you that, because then we'll know for sure whether or not it was worth it.
We want to revolt against that.
Absolutely. It's easy to revolt against that because, again, it seems like many of us are just inclined to be running after success in something, even though it might be running after success in God. And God seems to want to tell us the absolute opposite.
It's really true. I think he tells us sometimes with our circumstances. Maybe that's what we run against.
Talk about the pressure, if you feel it as a mom, to appear like you have it all together. How can we demonstrate that we don't have it all together? Maybe just that the need to not have it all together is essential for just relationships with other moms.
You know, the only way I've seen that I'm learning to not have it all together is when he allows things to fall apart. And I go, okay, I'm just going to let it fall. I would love to will myself into being less put together, but I feel like, or being more comfortable with being less put together, but I feel like, and I don't know if it's my stubbornness or what, but the way that this is working its way into me is when I don't have it all together, when a kid falls apart in the grocery store, or the way that I had hoped a certain child would behave in a setting, they don't, or I have an expectation for a certain child to be at a certain place at a certain time or age, and they're not. And I one of the things I've just been asking God is, help me to embrace you when my kids aren't where I want them to be, and still hold on to vision. You know, I still want to have vision for my family when things aren't coming together as they are. I think sometimes when our kids don't jump through the hoops that we want them to, we can also just toss out vision and let them run wild. And I don't know that that's the answer. I think for me, it's been the Lord saying, hold on to vision and hope, but be comfortable with the not yet. And I would love to hear that in my hour quiet time in the morning when I am the best mom ever and none of my kids are awake. But you know what? 7:30 hits and I'm not the best mom ever. And that's usually where he's teaching me.
I'm a very good mom in the morning as well. It's the evening after my teenagers have sounded off into what they expect that I start to think that maybe I wasn't so right in the morning.
Yeah, I when the house is quiet and everybody is quite literally sleeping, I'm an amazing mom.
I remember when I ran into a parent when I had little toddlers and I was complaining about one thing or another. I think it was potty training, because that was really challenging for someone who likes to have control. And he had teenagers, couple were in college, couple were still at home. And he just said, "Oh, Joe, little kids, little problems. Big kids cause big problems." And I always remember that every stage that I go through with my kids as they're getting older, I think, ah, maybe this is what he was talking about. And then a year will go by and I'll say, oh, no, it was this. So it is true that parenting is just this great stretching of who God knows I'm capable of being, but I'm not there yet.
Mm-hmm. That's really true.
I think that people find themselves, you know, if you're talking about a place where you're hidden, as I was reading your book and bringing laundry up the stairs or making dinner for the 40 millionth time, I was thinking about things like that it may not be a season as much as it might just be a period of time during the day when maybe we don't need to be getting recognition for all of the things that we do, but just serving and being in connection with him is what he's calling us to do. Do you find that as someone who's trying to parent six kids, be a wife, a writer, and a mom all at the same time?
Oh, yeah. I feel like there's a dozen invitations in a day. Mm. And I think maybe a personal challenge for me, for anybody listening, would be when you feel that inclination to share your hidden moment, because we just can. We can press one button and share it. What if you save that desire to share it and keep it private and ask God, what does he think about you in that moment? I feel like for me, I'm getting that a couple times a day where even I could just text a friend and rant, you know, and rant sounds like such a strong word, but I could text a friend and say, oh, I can't believe this happened with this kid or whatever it is. But instead, I feel the invitation of God to, what if I didn't say anything? And I just talk to God about it. I think there's, in some ways, I think the more full our lives get, the more opportunities there are to really hide.
Hmm. Oh, that's so true.
And hide in a good way. I don't mean hide like mask ourselves. I mean hide in God.
Right. And just to, it's kind of like that exercise where you do hear God speaking to you. If I could just understand how great he thought I was instead of thinking about how awful I feel like I am, it would really change the trajectory of my thoughts throughout the day. And I don't think that I stop enough to think about those things.
Yeah, as Ward says, his thoughts towards us outnumber the sands. And I just think, oh, there are so many things that he has to say to me about me. But yet I let my thinking about me get informed by comparison. I mean, social media just can throw, you know, fuel on that fire by comparison, by where I think I should be at a certain state. I just think he's way, way kinder to us than we think he is. He is a gentle God, and yet firm at the same time. But I think in the ways that we expect him to be firm, he's actually gentle.
Oh, Sarah, I just love that. You have so much wisdom in your book. Sarah's book is called Unseen, The Gift of Being Hidden in a World that Loves to Be Noticed. We do have a few copies to give away. You can go to our website at myfaithradio.com, click on Connecting Faith, submit your name and contact information. That way we will do a drawing at the end of the show for one of these beautiful books. Sarah, I just want to thank you for spending time with us on Connecting Faith and sharing your wisdom and just these little nuggets of the great joy we can find in those hidden places that God has us so that we can connect with him. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Joe. I so appreciate you having me on. Thank you.
Anytime. I look forward to reading what you put out next. And if people want to connect with you, where would they go?
Probably Instagram. I'm at Sarah Higgerty Wright on Instagram. And I'm on my blog at sarahhiggerty.net.
Okay, we'll have connections with that on our website as well. You can just go to myfaithradio.com. And Sarah, just have a blessed day, and thanks so much again.
Thank you, Joe.
Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.